Hey, everybody, you are listening to Sound Off 102 here on SCScoops.com for Sunday, March 7, 2010. I am the Solid Monster here with you. Thank you so much for downloading this week's show, as always. I have a lot of ground to cover this week. I'm a little bit under the weather, if you can tell, so just bear with me here. I do appreciate it. Want to blow through a whole bunch of topics here and then get to some of your feedback. I've got limited time, but a lot to talk about, so let's go back here and do things in sequential order and kick things off as usual with some Raw thoughts from this past Monday night. WWE on the road to WrestleMania, of course, building up a lot of big matches for this year's show. One of the strongest lineups on paper for a WrestleMania show in many, many years. Maybe going back to WrestleMania 17 in 2001. I was thinking about this. I can't remember a Mania since then that really has had a strong lineup on paper going into the show the way this show has. That doesn't mean every match is going to deliver, but it's shaping up to be a pretty big deal on March 28th, and I like what they're doing with a lot of the program. Shawn Michaels and The Undertaker, obviously your main event. More great stuff with Michaels and Taker mind games this past Monday night. DX, of course, cashing in on their tag team championship rematch against Show Miz, losing yet again. I for one hope this signals the end of DX. I know they're still doing some tags in the house show circuit, which is fine. But on TV, Michael should not be coming out with glow sticks in his hand prancing around if he's getting ready for a big showdown with The Undertaker. I thought that opening segment with Michaels and Triple H was really, really good. Just really good stuff from both of them. Real passionate promo, not your usual Triple H fare when it comes to that sort of thing. You know, it's kind of weird because when I thought back to reviewing the show and I went kind of bit by bit, segment by segment, my thoughts of the show changed a little bit. I thought when the show was over, it was a really good edition of Raw. And looking back on it, I think it was an average episode with some really good stuff sprinkled in, like the opening promo. And you know, the stuff with Legacy is still very confusing to me. I'm not sure why they're doing a handicap match next week. I would imagine this will end with a triple threat match made for WrestleMania, but we've seen these guys now in the ring with each other so many times that, you know, to me it loses a little bit of its luster that way. I'm still not sure what the fuck they're doing with Randy Orton as far as, are they going to make him a face, are they going to make him a heel? It's obvious to me Orton does not want to be a heel. He said that in interviews before. He certainly doesn't act like a babyface. So, you know, my gut tells me that we're headed to a triple threat at WrestleMania and some sort of swerve, perhaps, involving Rhodes actually being aligned still with Orton. Maybe DiBiase goes babyface, which was the plan a couple of months ago. I don't know exactly, but that would be my guess. You know, the Bret Hart-Vince McMahon angle, of all the angles they've done since Bret came back on January 4th, this was by far the weakest. I don't know why. Well, I guess I kind of know why Bret really didn't seem all that into it, but it just felt very uninspired on Bret Hart's end. Not his greatest performance. You know, coming out with the backwards cap and the cast on, hobbling around. I think at one point he actually was walking on the injured foot, so he was kind of walking wrong. He should have been putting pressure, you know, the opposite way. But I'm going to stick with my intuition here and go with the idea that this is still going to be a hoax revealed by Bret before the pay-per-view. He has the match with Vince. Vince said, I want you at WrestleMania. Bret said no. Vince kicked the crutch out from underneath him, trash-talked him a little bit more, and goaded Bret into accepting the match. And I just can't think that Bret's that stupid. You know, his character, he likes it to be very realistic and likes things to make sense. I would imagine he has some degree of creative control over where they're going with this, or else he never would have come back. My gut tells me that March 15th, Stone Cold Steve Austin is guest hosting Raw. And on that night, perhaps there'll be some sort of contract signing or something along those lines. And once Bret knows that his match with Vince is official, it's ironclad, he cannot change his mind like he's done before, Bret will at that point reveal that he is in fact not injured, and he'll beat the piss out of Vince McMahon. You know, if they're not gonna go with the hoax idea and they're gonna actually have Bret go to Mania with the bum leg, and we know the outcome is still gonna be Bret putting him in the sharpshooter and making him quit. But I can't visualize Bret Hart hobbling down to the ring in his pink tights at WrestleMania. You know, this thing has got to be put to bed before then, or else none of this makes sense. There's a million different ways you could have gone about this thing without having some stupid car accident angle, which we've seen on wrestling television a million times before. So I'm thinking March 15th, Stone Cold, something's going to go down there. Bret's going to reveal to the world what we already know, that he is not injured, and he will, in fact, beat the crap out of Vince McMahon at WrestleMania. The end of the show, we saw another big match, presumably, not officially, but presumably set up for WrestleMania, involving two men without a real direction. And one of those men, ironically enough, is Triple H, who usually is the focal point of a main event match at WrestleMania. He's been involved in a championship match every single year at WrestleMania, going back to, I believe, WrestleMania 17. You know, WrestleMania 18, he came back and beat Jericho for the Undisputed title. 19, he beat Booker T in a match he had no business winning to retain the World Heavyweight title. 20, he was in the main event. 21, he was in the main event. 22, he was in the main event. 23 doesn't count because he just wasn't on the card. 24, he was in the title match. 25, he was in the title match. So I, for one, am happy that the game is not involved in a championship match at this year's WrestleMania. And for that matter, I'm happy to see that he will likely not be getting into Money in the Bank, as some people have theorized, and then cashing in and getting a title match later in the night. That would suck. So it looks like Triple H and Sheamus has been set up for WrestleMania. I guess we'll find out more this coming Monday night. To me, you got to have those guys do something. And like I said, I'd much rather have Triple H in a match like this than a title match. But I can't help but wonder why they took the title of Sheamus in the first place. A Sheamus title defense against Triple H means not much, but a little bit more than just a straight singles match between the two of them. You know, Batista John Cena, which I'll get to in a second, doesn't necessarily need the title to be a big match. You know, when they did the match at SummerSlam a couple of years ago, it was babyface against babyface. There were no championships on the line. It was a big deal. And you've got that built-in storyline where Batista can say that he's jealous of Cena. You know, they fought once before, he broke his neck. You don't need the WWE title involved. And I think Sheamus and Triple H could have benefited more by having something on the line. Instead, it looks like it's just going to be a one-on-one match. Just some random mid-card match between the two of them at WrestleMania. I, for one, if that's the case, I'm very curious to see how Triple H handles this match. Sheamus, along with Drew McIntyre, two of the chosen ones, behind the scenes. Those guys are being groomed for big things. Sheamus is Triple H's workout buddy. Triple H respects Sheamus, his workout ethic, his dedication. And that's fine. You know, that Triple H has handpicked a younger guy to, you know, help kind of give the rub to. I'm not going to begrudge him for that, even though there's been plenty of more talented guys, even more so than Sheamus, who have not been given that same opportunity. But anyway, I'm curious to see, you know, does he beat him straight up at WrestleMania? Does he give Sheamus a WrestleMania win over himself, which would be a big deal? I don't know. I guess we'll see if he's, you know, how he feels about it as we get closer to the pay-per-view. Ultimately, it's Vince McMahon's call. But John Cena and Batista is the last thing I want to talk about as far as Raw goes. I'm not even going to talk about Cheech and Chong because there's no point. I loved the John Cena-Batista segment. You won't always hear me say that about a John Cena segment, but it was awesome. It was the best part of the entire show, even more so than the Shawn Michaels-Undertaker stuff. I love Dave Batista. He's awesome. I don't necessarily love the fact that he came out dressed as a long-lost member of the Village People, but, you know, to each their own. I mean, in all honesty, if you ran into Big Dave in a dark alley and he was wearing what he was wearing on Monday night, would you really say something to him? I don't think so. But he's just such a great, arrogant prick heel. He's not a chicken shit heel, which I love. He doesn't back down from you. He's not going to run away from you. He's a big dude. He can beat you up. I'll say this much. I would actually be very disappointed if Batista loses the belt to John Cena at WrestleMania. You know, and I think there's so much stuff on this show coming up on the 28th of March that you almost don't even need to have the title change. You know, usually they like to go off the air with a feel-good moment and championship changing hands, and I don't even think this match should main event the show over Michaels Undertaker, although if there was any other match I feel that should end the show, it would be Cena-Batista. And Cena Batista may well end the show, and I would be disappointed in that. But they really elevated their game on Monday night and made me care about that match. And it was in large part because of Batista, although I think John Cena did a fine job also. Sometimes less is more, and Cena's lack of response to Batista, because Cena will come back next week and he'll have a response to Big Dave, and who knows, maybe he'll cut a promo even better than his. I don't think he will, but who knows. But I just thought the whole thing was handled masterfully. I loved every minute of this. I now have a championship match. Actually, more than one championship match, but I now have a WWE title match that I can care about for WrestleMania that has a backstory, that has some continuity to it, something that we don't always see in WWE these days, storyline continuity, playing off the match the two of them had back at SummerSlam in 2008. Cena was already hurt going into the match, but they played it up as though... Cena, in executing a top rope leg drop, or attempting to, he landed on his back and his neck and supposedly ruptured some discs in his neck, which is bullshit. He was already hurt going in, but it's a good storyline to play off of. And Cena did have neck surgery. He does have a scar to this day on his neck by his throat where they went in. So, you know, it would have been nice to see some footage maybe from it. I'm sure we'll get that in the promo packages leading up to WrestleMania, but just really... fucking awesome stuff from the two of them. I was very impressed. And for me, that made Raw Monday night. And it was the definition of what you call a money promo. Which is something that TNA could really learn from. Because TNA has a lot of good talkers, and they've had some segments that were really good in terms of promo work. But even though they have a lot of good talkers in their company, TNA does not understand the concept of drawing money through money promos. It's almost like they don't even care about pay-per-views. And I'm going to get to TNA in a second. And that horse shit they put on TV on Thursday night. But if there's one area that TNA could learn a lesson or two from WWE, it's how to draw money. Which clearly, at least the people writing television for TNA, wink wink, don't have a fucking clue about. And that's why I see bad things ahead for them on Mondays. But anyway, average Raw with some really good shit sprinkled in there. Looking forward to Raw this coming Monday night. Chris Angel is the guest host. That I really could care less about. The one thing I think Chris Angel may be actually really good for, and I've got my fingers crossed, I'm hoping that, he's a magician, and perhaps he can make Michael Cole disappear in the middle of the show, and then Jim Ross can walk out to replace him. Chris Angel would automatically, on the spot, become my favorite guest host if he does, in fact, make Michael Cole disappear on Monday night. We shall see. Oh, we also learned that Mad Dog Vachon, Maurice Vachon, going into the Hall of Fame. It sounds like a solid pick. Mad Dog Vachon doesn't get me terribly excited, but, you know, the Hall of Fame is at its core about people who in some way, shape, or form deserve to be recognized for their accomplishments in the wrestling industry, and there's no doubt that Mad Dog Vachon accomplished a lot in this business, going back to the 50s and the 60s. I am not of his generation, and so for better or worse, my main memory of Mad Dog Vachon is actually from the In Your House Good Friends Better Enemies pay-per-view from 1996, which featured Shawn Michaels against Big Daddy Cool Diesel in one of Kevin Nash's, if not Kevin Nash's, greatest match, I think. It was a no-holds-barred match, just really, really good stuff. And I believe they were in Louisville, Kentucky. And Mad Dog Vachon was actually a guest in the audience that night, in the front row, right by the corner of the aisleway. And at one point in the match, Diesel went over, very calmly walked over to the guardrail, back when they had the old-school steel guardrail barriers, opened it up, grabbed Mad Dog Vachon. People in the crowd who weren't sitting in that immediate front row area probably had no idea what was going on. Diesel just randomly grabbed a fan, but it was, in fact, Mad Dog Vachon. And proceeded to throw him to the ground and rip off his leg. Now, Mad Dog was involved in an automobile accident many years earlier that was severe enough that he had to have his leg amputated. So he was wearing a prosthetic leg. And the visual of Diesel ripping his leg off was unbelievable. We actually saw it years later on SmackDown when Roddy Piper did the same thing to Zach Gowen. On SmackDown, but this was something else. I mean, some people thought it was way over the top. I loved it, you know, and then they brought the leg in the ring and he was going to use it as a weapon, and then Shawn Michaels grabbed it and used it as a baseball bat and hit Diesel in the head with it. That's my memory of Mad Dog Vachon. He should go into the Hall of Fame for that alone. So, you know, congrats to him. I think we have three more names yet to be announced, one of which will be Stu Hart. And who the other two people will be, we'll find out in the next 2 weeks. All right, let's talk TNA here for a second. This past Thursday was TNA's final Impact broadcast on Thursday nights in its traditional time slot. And I checked out most of the show. And I heard all these things about, you've got to see the blade job that Ric Flair does at the end of the show. It's the biggest in his career. He bleeds a gusher. It really adds a lot to the hype for the match. So I watched the show, and what a shit show this was. I mean, what a steaming pile of shit this show was. Now, you know, look, we all know I'm not a fan of Vince Russo's writing. We know this. I don't know why Hulk Hogan and Bischoff have been there now for 2 months and Russo still has a job. I don't get it. I don't understand it. It was never a question of how hard Russo works. I'm sure he works very, very hard. It doesn't mean that you're good at what you do just because you work hard. In fact, it's kind of pathetic that Vince Russo supposedly works so hard on these shows and they still turn out to be shit. So, I watched the show and, you know, on commentary a whole bunch of times they keep mentioning the fact that they're going to Monday nights. But to me, they did nothing to get me excited about the show on Monday. They really didn't. You know, why Ric Flair, the heel, is bleeding at the end of the show when they're trying to get you interested in watching Hulk Hogan and Abyss get revenge on and battle Ric Flair and AJ Styles this Monday? Why Flair was the one bleeding a gusher at the end? I don't get that. I know Hogan was busted open the week before. To me, it almost would have made sense to kind of reverse that and have Hogan maybe bleeding as you went off the air on Thursday, to promote him and Abyss getting their revenge on Monday. But that's TNA's logic behind doing it, and nobody can really explain that. This whole stupid storyline about the Hall of Fame ring, I mean, I talked about that last week. I don't quite understand why they were going so nuts about Abyss having Hogan's Hall of Fame ring when Ric Flair could just give AJ Styles his Hall of Fame ring, although he probably doesn't have it anymore because he's probably pawned it off somewhere. And on top of that, that blade job really wasn't anything special. Maybe I've just been desensitized to seeing bloodbaths in wrestling over the years. And granted, it's more blood than you'll ever see in a WWE show. I'll give them that. But for all the hype I heard all week long from people, and I read the spoilers and all this, oh my God, you won't believe it. It's going to be so unbelievably brutal and violent. I just sat there with, you know, shrugging my shoulders at the end of the show thinking, this is it? I mean, this is their big, and I'm not even talking about the blood, I'm talking about the angle. This is their big push to Monday nights? Hulk Hogan sitting backstage and getting bitched out by Bubba the fucking Love Sponge, who is probably the biggest pile of shit in the world himself. As a human being, Bubba is not somebody I would care to associate myself with for some reason. Hulk Hogan, I guess, when it comes to Hogan, he probably likes the fact that Bubba has a wide audience and you know, he can go on Bubba's show anytime and talk and promote whatever shit he needs to promote, but you know, Bubba the Love Sponge in TNA is kind of useless, and he cuts this promo on Hulk Hogan, which in some respects I thought was good, in most respects I thought was not. Because basically the way they're hyping this main event on Monday night is as follows. They're not hyping it as though a legend, and by the way, it's all about Hogan, when I think they should really play up Flair a little bit more than they are. You know, in the advertising, it's all about Hogan. I get that because Hogan is more of a household name that you would recognize on a billboard than Ric Flair, unless you're a wrestling fan. I get that. But the way I would have promoted this was, you have the return of two legends to the squared circle battling it out on Monday night. Essentially, the whole message of the segment with Hogan and Bubba is that Hulk Hogan is a cripple who cannot and should not ever again be in the wrestling ring, or he may die. Will Hogan die in the ring on Monday night? Will he be able to climb through the ropes? Because, of course, he's crippled, as Bubba the Love Sponge basically told us on Monday night. He could barely get out of bed in the morning. This is supposed to excite us to see Hogan in the ring on Monday night. This is supposed to be the counter to the John Cena-Vince McMahon match, which in and of itself, by the way, was a reaction to Hogan and Flair wrestling on Monday night. Because you know that when Vince McMahon wrestles, it's something special because Vince doesn't wrestle too much anymore. And Vince has always, he has always meant something to the ratings. So, believe you me, Vince McMahon and John Cena is a direct reaction to Hogan and Flair wrestling on Impact on Monday night. And I'm pretty sure that Vince McMahon and John Cena, that segment, that match, which probably won't be much of a match, so I'll call it an angle, because I imagine Batista will interfere and it will be over fairly quickly. That will at least double, if not more than double, the rating that Hulk Hogan and Ric Flair are going to get, which in many respects is very sad. But it is what it is. A piss-poor job by TNA of getting that angle hyped up. I will watch Impact. I will go back and forth. I don't have DVR. I don't have TiVo. So I'll flip around in between commercials. I'll try to see as much of Impact as I can while watching most of Raw. I wish them all the best. I want them to succeed. I don't want them to do a 0.5 rating on Monday night, but I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility. I think I predicted a 0.9 on the podcast last week for the debut show. I'll stick with my instincts on that. I could be off. But if I'm off, I don't think I'm going to be off by much. I think the people expecting Impact to come out of the gate and get another 1.4 rating are going to be very disappointed come Tuesday afternoon. I want TNA to succeed. I don't like the direction they're going in with this writing team. There have been positive changes, but not enough. You know, Bischoff ran a wrestling organization before. He made a lot of mistakes. He did a lot of good things. He keeps talking about how he's learned from those mistakes. I'm not really seeing it right now. I'm really not. You know, TNA is hyping up a whole bunch of surprises. Dixie Carter announced on her Twitter that Sting will be back on Monday night. Hulk Hogan, in a radio interview with Jim Kerr a couple of days ago, may have inadvertently spilled the beans on Rob Van Dam signing with TNA. No guarantee that he'll be on the show Monday, but he made it pretty apparent that RVD had signed with the company and would likely be debuting on Monday. RVD had some comments on his website where he did not confirm nor deny the rumors, which tells me right off the bat that RVD's coming in on Monday. And in fact, he may be on the show in the first 5 minutes. TNA put this video out on YouTube to promote the fact that something big was going to go down in the first 5 minutes of Impact on Monday night at 9 o'clock. We shall see what that is. It may be RVD. You know, will Jeff Hardy be on the show? A lot of questions about those charges still hanging over his head. If he goes to jail, he's not going to be on any show. But if Hardy goes somewhere, he's going to TNA. And it wouldn't surprise me if his friend Shane Helms went with him. I was hearing rumors, you know, maybe they were trying to put together a Jeff Hardy-RVD match for Monday. It could happen. I don't know that it will. I haven't heard anything about Jeff Hardy being there on Monday, but he's certainly leaning towards coming back to TNA more so than WWE. For a number of reasons, you know, the wellness policy being one of them, the schedule being another. The fact that Jeff is still pissed off at Vince McMahon and WWE for mocking him on TV in those CM Punk segments after he worked very hard all summer to help put Punk over like $1 million in their feud. Which I can understand that. I can understand Jeff being upset about that. You know, innocent until proven guilty. You know, Jeff had these charges levied against him. Doesn't mean that he's guilty of them. And for WWE to go on TV as pissed off as they were and make fun of him, yeah, I'd be upset about that too. But I still think he'd be crazy to go to TNA where he will be a big fish in a small pond and get lost in the shuffle. Whereas if he went back to WWE, he would have a main event ready position waiting for him. Because if there's one thing they need, especially on SmackDown, it's another big time player at the top of the roster, which they really don't have too many of right now. If Shawn Michaels and The Undertaker take time off after WrestleMania, which they will, Shawn may be taking quite a bit of time off, depending on the outcome of that match. They're going to really find themselves in a bit of a hole. Speaking of big names who may be missing in action, I may as well segue into this little piece of news here. And this comes per the Wrestling Observer newsletter, to give full credit to them. Triple H apparently is having some issues with one of his previously torn quadricep muscles in his leg. He's torn both of them, and he's had surgery on both. there's no other quad that to be injured other than the two existing ones. And apparently one of them, I don't know in which leg, is giving him some problems. And he may have to have that addressed in the next couple of months. That is not encouraging news. You know, it's one of those things where it could, you know, an injury could happen at any moment. I mean, remember the last time it happened? The first time it happened to Triple H was in 2001. You know, he was charging at Chris Jericho from behind. Jericho had Steve Austin in a lion tamer. And all Triple H did was come forward and nail Jericho, and he just planted his foot wrong. And his quad just tore off the bone. And I think we could all speculate as to why. But nonetheless, it was just a freak thing, and he was out for 8 months. The second time, which was back in 2007, I believe at the what may have been the final New Year's Revolution pay-per-view that they had, I believe Triple H had given somebody, I want to say it was Randy Orton, a spine buster in a match against Rated RKO, Orton and Edge, and just landing on the spine buster tore his other quad. I'd hate to see something like that happen to Triple H in a match against Sheamus at WrestleMania, but if he's got issues with a quad, you know, that has already been injured before, and for all intents and purposes could have and should have been a career-ending injury, and now there's the prospects perhaps of shredding that quad one more time. I mean, if that happens, his career is over. There's no coming back from that if he hurts that quad again or tears it off the bone. I don't know the. So, again, it's just a matter of what issues is he having. That has not yet been specified. Is it just throbbing? Does it feel like there's a sharp shooting pain? Is he in jeopardy of tearing it again? I don't know. But that's something to look out for. Triple H is less apt to take time off if Undertaker and Shawn Michaels are gone. But at what expense? At what cost? You know, if you're in pain and there's something going on, you better take time off to have it taken care of because you're playing with your career here. So that's just an interesting piece of news to follow where Triple H is concerned. Finally found out the toxicology results of on the death of Umaga, Eddie Fatu, back in December. Apparently it was a basically a lethal cocktail of painkillers and muscle relaxers. It's your typical young wrestling drug death. As horrible as that sounds. I don't know that anybody was really surprised by this. But just to think that WWE was vying for his services, and Umaga had verbally agreed to come back to the company. Now, he would have had to have passed a wellness examination beforehand, and if he was still having issues with pills, it would have been interesting to see how that would have turned out. You know, would they have stopped him in his tracks and said, oh, you can't come back, or would they have turned the other cheek because they didn't want him signing with Hogan and TNA, which was the real reason that WWE wanted him back. And in fact, they probably would have debuted him in the Royal Rumble match. Obviously, that never happened. What I found a little more disturbing, though, is the fact, and again, this comes per the Wrestling Observer newsletter, and I'll just quote it here. The fact that when Umaga got released or fired or whatever from WWE the last time, he did so because he refused to go to rehab. It was stipulated that he had to complete a stint in rehab, and he basically said, no, I'm not going to do it. And apparently, you know, publicly nobody would say anything, but privately a lot of the wrestlers backstage who loved Umaga, they were really good friends with him backstage, everybody loved Eddie, and apparently several of them spoke highly of his refusal to go to rehab. Almost as though he should be congratulated for standing up to the suits in the office. And I hear, you know, you read something like that and you think to yourself, what is wrong with people? You know, where are their priorities? If this is a man that they care about, that they're really good friends with, everybody loves Umaga. Apparently they didn't love him enough to, you know, go up to the guy and basically say, hey, they're asking you to do this for a reason. This is for your health. You've got kids, you've got a wife, you've got a lot of people that love you, that love hanging around you. You've got the best years of your career ahead of you. You're the most talented part of that entire family in the ring. Everybody spoke highly of Eddie. But if they cared enough about him, you would think that that would be their attitude. Let's get this guy some help. We don't want to see anything bad happen to him, especially in an industry where it's happened dozens upon dozens upon dozens of times before. Instead, the mentality of many of these wrestlers, apparently, was good for Eddie, standing up to management. Nobody should be forced to go to rehab. Nobody should be forced to do something that they don't want to do. And that may be true of certain things in life. I certainly don't want to be forced in my life to do something I don't want to do, but these circumstances were a little bit different. Clearly, he had an issue. The company was concerned about it. And they wanted him to get help. And he refused. And I'm not saying that maybe he'd be alive today if he had gone to rehab that time and that the wrestlers are somehow responsible for his death. I just think the mentality there is severely flawed. And I was really shocked, quite frankly, to read something like that. It just never ceases to amaze me. It really never ceases. Pete Rose was just announced. WWE.com will be hosting Raw March 22nd. So unfortunately, the guest host concept will live on beyond Steve Austin on the 15th. I was hopeful that he would be the final one, and you know, maybe in a couple of months they'd bring The Rock in to do something when it fits into his schedule, which they still will, but apparently the guest host concept is going to continue on perhaps into the summer. And we've got Pete Rose on March 22nd, which I actually think is really cool. WWE Hall of Famer Pete Rose. Now, I know Kane is a member of the SmackDown brand, but it is the go-home show to WrestleMania. And Kane is in Money in the Bank, so you can easily have Kane make an appearance on Raw. So I'm hoping for some sort of interaction between Kane and Pete Rose. We better have a Kane-Pete Rose interaction, or I'm going to be very disappointed. I'd love to see him make a cameo at WrestleMania, for that matter. We haven't seen Pete Rose at a WrestleMania since 2000. But we shall see. I know they already announced that the first Raw after WrestleMania will have the cast of some shitty movie coming out. So we will unfortunately have some good ones, but more, I think, crappy guest hosts than not in the weeks and months to come. Hopefully not quite as bad as the Lucky Charms bullshit that we saw with Cheech and Chong on Monday. But I said I wouldn't talk about it, so let's not go there. Let's not go there. There was somebody who wanted me to talk about the Undertaker's pyro malfunction. Apparently I neglected to really talk too much, if at all, about it on the last show after it happened. There really isn't much more to add to it. I saw the footage. It was very, very frightening. You know, the Undertaker was quite literally, for a few seconds, engulfed in a fireball. And had enough sense to throw down his jacket and his hat, which was charred up, apparently. You know, he came out on Raw the next night, and people were complaining about these yellow spots, or these yellow streaks on his face, which apparently were from the burns, or from some sort of cream to help cover or heal the burns. It's a scary situation. I don't know why you would have flames shooting up from underneath the ground in front of you. I can understand if it was on the side, along the perimeter of the aisleway. And certainly Undertaker, his flaming entrances have been around for years and years. I don't know for sure if the pyro person was fired. I would imagine that they are no longer working as a pyro person in WWE, but Undertaker was obviously very upset about this. He was livid backstage after the Elimination Chamber. You know, they kept bringing him bottles of water in his pod. People, you know, the referees were coming up and asking him if he wanted to cut the match short. He insisted the match go on as planned. It went over 30 minutes. He was out there a long time in a lot of pain and was very pissed off when he got backstage. I would be, too, if I was almost burned to death in front of millions of people. But there really isn't much more to add to it. I think you will see, I think, safety precautions, even more so than usual, taken. But I don't think this means that Undertaker will never again have fire in his entrance. In fact, he had it on Raw the next night. But I just think he may be keeping his distance a little bit more from the flames when they appear. And you would too, quite frankly. I mean, I've been to these Raw tapings and SmackDown tapings, and sometimes I'm pretty fucking far from the ring, in all honesty. And I could feel the flames. I could feel the extreme heat from all the way up in the rafters. I can't imagine what it must be like to walk down the aisle with those flames all around you. I mean, I know some of the guys will douse themselves with a bottle of water before they come out, which makes sense. But man, I remember when the announcers, during the Eric Bischoff era of Raw, when he was GM, when the announcers were moved to the back of the arena by the aisleway, and I know the announcers, Jim Ross, Jerry Law, they hated it. They hated it over there because of the loudness, quite frankly, of the pyro. as if those guys aren't already deaf, sitting there hearing that every week. But it was the flames from Kane's entrance and you know, the spectacular entrances with all the pyro. Imagine having to sit there with the extreme heat just practically on top of you. You wouldn't like that either. So not much really more to add to the Undertaker pyro story. He is healing. He is okay now. That could have been a disastrous situation for The Undertaker, for WWE, for WrestleMania. But thankfully, tragedy was avoided. All right, so let's break into the mailbag here. I'm dying here, but gotta chug along. We got some letters I want to get to. Some really good stuff that you guys have been sending in. So, again, thesolemonster@gmail.com is the place to send any questions or comments you have. Of course, you could send replies on Twitter, but if you want something mentioned on the show, the best way to do that is to email me directly. Although you should be following me on Twitter either way. So, got an email here, a bit of a follow-up email actually from our buddy. I hope I'm saying this right. Fiergas Kelly, I believe is the proper way to say the name. But anyway, he wrote in a couple of weeks ago to mention a little bit of a pattern that had developed with the Royal Rumble over the last couple of years that I had not noticed. In that, for the last however many years, 5, 6 years. The runner-up in the Royal Rumble, the number two guy, who is the last person to be thrown out, has gone on to WrestleMania to get a championship opportunity anyway. And I thought, well, you know, maybe it's just a coincidence. And I didn't even think anything of it, in all honesty, after this year's Royal Rumble, but he emailed me to point out something very interesting. He says, just an update, Solomon. So you may remember my email from a few weeks ago regarding the runner-up of the Rumble, also receiving a title shot main event at WrestleMania. Well, I've been out of the wrestling news loop for a couple of weeks, and looking at the WrestleMania 26 card, to my shock and surprise, I noticed that John Cena will challenge Batista for the WWE Championship. It is indeed 6 years of this pattern. I know that these matches won't be the quote-unquote real main event, at least they shouldn't be, but still, they are main events. And as I told Fiergas, it's pretty amazing. I didn't even think about it until he pointed it out to me, that yes, indeed, John Cena was thrown out by Edge in this year's Royal Rumble. It didn't look like John Cena was going to be in a title match, and yet here he is in a WWE Championship main event, which may well go on last at WrestleMania. It's just, I don't know if it's a coincidence. I don't know if it's by design. It's kind of like the Undertaker streak. You know, the Undertaker probably went, he must have gone 10-0, actually 9-0. I think The Undertaker went 9-0 at WrestleMania. That was when he beat Triple H at WrestleMania 17 before they finally started acknowledging that he was, in fact, undefeated. And I think at that point, they said to themselves, wow, we've got something here. Let's play off of this. But The Undertaker went 8-0 before that without them even realizing that he's got this undefeated streak at WrestleMania that we could really play up and help drum up interest for his match every year. So I think it's the sort of thing, I don't even know if they realize this. I don't think they do it on purpose, nor do I think they'll point it out, but it does kind of take some of the luster away from the actual Royal Rumble winner. You know, if I was in the Royal Rumble, I wouldn't be upset at all if I was the last one eliminated, because hell, I'll get a title match anyway. So it's an interesting pattern that I didn't notice until now, and I thank you for pointing that out. Dear Solomonster, what do you think of the WWE's pay-per-view name change for the May event from Wild Card to Over the Edge? Do you think that it at all is too close to the name of the pay-per-view that Owen Hart died on back in 1999? This is an interesting question here. The Wild Card pay-per-view that was set for May 23rd in Detroit has been changed to WWE Over the Limit. I'm not sure why. I think that show may have some sort of Las Vegas theme to it, even though they're not in Vegas. But, you know, I'm normally not somebody who takes great offense to things like that. I'm not an overly PC or sensitive person when it comes to things like that. Most of the time. And I'm okay with that. I mean, if they want to use the Over the Limit name, I mean, whatever. It's not a big deal. I do find it a little bit ironic, I guess, or maybe even disconcerting, because it falls on the exact same day that Owen Hart died. It was May 23rd, 1999 in Kansas City, when he plummeted to his death at the Over the Edge pay-per-view. And the only reason that you no longer had any Over the Edge pay-per-view shows was because that was the show that Owen Hart died on, and they didn't want to use the name anymore. And now, here they have another May pay-per-view debuting on the exact same day that Owen Hart died, called Over the Limit. I think you could have come up with a million better names. I don't know why you had to go with that name. I think Wildcard was fine. You know, I mean, I didn't have any bias towards Judgment Day. I thought that was one of the weaker pay-per-view titles anyway. But, you know, Over the Limit would not have been my first choice for a pay-per-view name. Sarab from Bangalore, India writes in with some WrestleMania memories. I asked you guys on the last podcast if you had any WrestleMania memories to share. Write in, and I would mention it on the podcast, and this is the first. He writes in, Dear Solomon, sir, I've been listening to the podcast for quite a while now, and I have to say it is by far the best wrestling audio show podcast I've ever come across. I have been to all WrestleMania events since 1999 up until 2008. I could not go to last year's show as I was unable to get to the U.S. due to my studies here in India. We plan our holidays to the U.S. or Canada accordingly just for the event. There have been quite a few WrestleMania moments which are etched into my memory since my childhood days, but the one that really stands out is the Sky Dome WrestleMania X8. It had the most electric feeling, and the crowd was so pumped. I was with my cousins, and I think we were the only ones cheering for The Rock in our section. I even thought that it was kind of the end of an era for WWF and pro wrestling, with the name change, Austin and Rock all drifting away, the Triple H saturation, the horrible and utterly useless yearly draft, and so on and so forth. But sadly, I've never attended a WWE show in my own country. I believe they've come here twice. The second time they came in 2002, the event was so horribly mismanaged in New Delhi, the tickets were announced to be all sold out, with literally thousands waiting outside the venue. But after the show, we came to know exactly one half of the arena was empty. It's been 8 years since then. I really think they can attract a solid 15,000-person crowd per show today if they did a 3- or 4-city tour of India. After all, WWE is the second-most-watched programming in Indian television after cricket. I didn't know that. TNA did a promotional event 4 or 5 years back in a couple of smaller cities here, and close to 25,000 people turned up to see just a handful of talent. Imagine what WWE could do. Thanks for mentioning this on the show. Well, thank you for writing in. I believe WWE, maybe it was that tour they did a couple of years ago. I could have sworn they did a tour after 2002, actually in the last couple of years, where they went to India, and William Regal was actually among many of the talent that got very, very sick on that tour. And a lot of guys vowed never to go back, as a matter of fact, because of the experiences they had on that tour. I don't know. I think it was a tour of India, but I could be wrong about that. Maybe that has something to do with the fact that they have not gone back as often. I don't know. But, you know, the Indian market is a very big market. I did not know that apparently WWE is the most popular programming that they have after cricket. If that's true, that's pretty incredible. And while I can understand why a lot of the wrestlers wouldn't want to go after the experience they had last time, it's still a very big market with a lot of people. One of the largest populations in the world. Maybe the largest after China. So why would WWE not want to go back there? Got some feedback on the RVD Batista movie Wrong Side of Town. I played a clip from it on the last show. I did find a copy of it. And I do thank the person who kind of steered me in the right direction. I have not yet watched it. I tried playing it on my computer, and it didn't work for some reason. This computer I'm on right now, I'm still on my desktop. I ordered a new laptop computer from Dell, my very first one. And I'm hopeful that when I get that computer up and running, I'll be able to watch the movie on there. It's actually sitting in a box right next to me. This came on Friday, I want you to know. And I've been so busy the last 2 days, and probably a little too busy because now I'm sick, but I haven't even had a chance to open the box yet. So I've got this brand new laptop sitting next to me. Hopefully this won't be the last sound off for a couple of weeks. I mean, I don't see any reason why my software wouldn't work on the new computer, but it's running Windows 7, and I know that a lot of stuff apparently is not compatible with Windows 7, so I'm a little worried. I'm not going to take this computer apart just yet, the one that I'm on, just in case. But it's just a word to the wise that Solomonster is going through a bit of a transition here with computers. So if anything at all, anything bad was to happen, something was no longer working, I'll mention it on my Twitter page. But Yeah, it's sitting in a box. I'm looking at it right now, and I know that I've got a window of about 21 days in which to return the system if there's something wrong with it or if I don't like it. But it's from the date of your invoice, which I never could get a clear answer from Dell on what the invoice date was. Was it the date that it ships? Was it the date that it arrives? I've got different answers from three different Dell reps. But I know it's been sitting here for about 3 days now, and I'm running out of time to, in case there is something wrong with it, to send it back. So I'm gonna open this thing up when I'm done here recording the show. But anyway, some of you have written in with feedback from the movie. This person says, I thought it wasn't bad. I thought that the movie would be way worse. RVD is the main star, but I thought Batista was way better as far as his acting. He was such a badass. I recommend that you rent it or watch it online, but don't spend your money on it. Ryan Edwards writes in from Dorset, England. Just finished watching Wrong Side of Town, and I've got to say it was pretty decent, although I wasn't really expecting much going in. There were some scenes that I just found hilarious, like the Batista one that you mentioned on the last podcast, even though they should not have been. The story was pretty good. The ending was expected, but it's well worth a watch. P.S. Batista was really great. He seemed just like it was him, with a little more anger. See the last 5 minutes before the credits to see what I mean. Well, that's pretty cool. I heard Batista really only has two scenes in the whole movie, which kind of disappointed me, and we've already heard the audio from one scene. But now, you know, now that you say that, I'm actually curious to see what happens at the end of this film. By the way, you know, keep in mind that this film Batista is doing for WWE called Killing Karma, I think I mentioned that on the last show. The premise sounds just completely stupid. It just sounds like any other WWE movie. But after watching Batista on Raw Monday Night, he's not the greatest actor in the world, but he is the most believable badass, I think, that they have on the entire roster. So if they could just feed roles like that to him, but just make sure he does not wear the leather vest with that weird bracelet and the stud in his nose, I think he'll be okay. I think he'll be okay. But, you know, Batista coming out dressed like that to anybody who's not a wrestling fan who puts the show on and is watching it, I hate to say it, but my first impression, even before the Village People analogy, when I saw Batista, I don't know how many of you are familiar with the Hustle promotion in Japan. I believe it's Hustle. They have a character, or they did, called Razor Ramon Hard Gay. It's a Japanese guy. He doesn't look anything like Scott Hall, but for whatever reason, his name is Razor Ramon Hard Gay. And Batista looked like Razor Ramon Hard Gay on steroids. He really did. And that's not a good thing. That's not the way you want your WWE champion to be looking. But hey, you know, to each his own. Like I said, you be the one to go up to Big Dave and tell him that you don't like his fashion sense and see what happens. Jared had a question. One of his questions was, Michael Cole a fan of wrestling prior to being an announcer for WWE? As I told Jared directly, I don't know for sure if Cole was a fan before. He started with WWE in 1997. And, I know before that he worked years earlier. He worked for CBS Radio and was actually an embedded reporter during the first Iraq War. So he has legit journalism credentials. My gut tells me he probably was not. I mean, maybe he watched it loosely, not that he never, ever watched pro wrestling before, but my guess would be that he probably wasn't a fan who watched with any great consistency. I've never seen or heard him do an interview where he references his favorite wrestler growing up or memories as a fan from before he got into the business or anything like that, so it doesn't mean he wasn't a fan, but my instinct tells me he probably wasn't. And I think it shows, quite frankly, in his commentary because, you know, 9 times out of 10, if not 10 times out of 10, he shows little, if any, emotion, little, if any, passion in his commentary. It all seems manufactured. Compare that with somebody like Jim Ross, and it's like night and day. So I think that, what you see with Michael Cole is what you get. I do think he's handcuffed to some degree by Vince McMahon and the way Vince McMahon wants his announcers to behave. But you know what? People work within the parameters of what Vince McMahon wants, and they can still be really good at what they do. And in my opinion, Michael Cole, maybe he's better than what he shows us on TV every week, but right now Michael Cole is far from a good wrestling announcer. Alexander writes in, Dear Solomonster, first off, congratulations on 100-plus episodes of The Sound Off. Keep up the good work. Question number one, do you think the Money in the Bank match should have more than 6 participants? I ask because every year there are notable absentees, and now nearly every spot has been done that can be done with six people. I'm pretty sure there's eight people in the match this year. I'm pretty sure that the match has been eight men for the last, I think, 2 years. So I believe it's an eight-man Money in the Bank ladder match. Question number two, do you think it would be a good idea for an NXT guy to break the format and either enter the match, that being Money in the Bank, or just do a run-in at a point when everyone is down and grab the briefcase? In other words, rookie involvement in Money in the Bank, bearing in mind that Daniel Bryan could win the match as he's classified as a rookie. I know they want the NXT guys at WrestleMania. I don't know that they have any involvement planned for them in the Money in the Bank match. So I'm going to say no, but I know that they will be there. They may just be there in the audience. They may accompany some of their pros to ringside. I don't know. But there should be some sort of NXT cameo or involvement at WrestleMania. I just don't think it will be Money in the Bank. Alexander has an observation as well. Solomonster, over here in the UK, I know eight other people who listen to your show. The interesting part is that none of us actually watch wrestling. We find your show more entertaining because of the vivid descriptions and the passion featured. The only time we watch your show, I guess listen to my show, is if you sell us... Oh, the only time we watch the show, I see, is if you sell us a match that, like you did with Taker HBK at WrestleMania last year, in which case we then went to YouTube the match. I wonder how many of your other listeners have adopted this system? Well, that's a good question. I'll throw that out to the people listening. How many of you either don't watch any wrestling at all anymore on TV or watch very, very little of it but listen to this show to get your wrestling fix? I'd be curious to know the answer to that question, too. So write in and let me know if you fit that description. Ash writes in, Dear Solomonster, I was watching NXT and wanted to know, how come the NXT rookies do not get their own entrance music and have to use their WWE pros music instead? Well, because they're rookies. That's why. They don't deserve their own music. Not yet, anyway. Although, if Daniel Bryan does come to the ring to Final Countdown by Europe, that would make me so happy. That was his music in Ring of Honor, by the way. Dear Solomonster, on Sound Off 100, you mentioned being the first man to manage a woman. And in the interest of trivia, I figured I would retort. You, in fact, would not be the first man to manage a woman, such as Maryse, because Harvey Whippleman holds that distinction for his role managing Bertha Faye during her reign as WWF Women's Champion in the mid-90s. That comes from Matt, and he's absolutely right. I completely forgot about Harvey Whippleman and Bertha Faye. But he is correct. I guess I would be the second man to manage a diva. Works fine for me. I'm not complaining. Andrew writes in, Dear Solomonster, the other day I found my ECW One Night Stand 2006 DVD, and of all the things I saw, an SE Scoop sign at ringside. So I take it the SE Scoop's crew was in attendance. It was most prominent during the Balls Mahoney Masato Tanaka match. The next time I watch it, I'll look for the Solomonster in the crowd. Well, you can look all you want to, but the Solomonster wasn't there that night, and he kicks himself for it. Actually, one of the biggest things I regret was not being in attendance at the Hammerstein Ballroom for the very first one-night stand back in 2005. I really didn't start going to too many shows in that venue, like the Ring of Honor shows, until 2006. My brother got me into it. We would go to a lot of shows. I haven't been to one in a while, but for a couple of years there, I was going to almost every show they had in New York. And, living in New York, specifically in Brooklyn, commuting into the city, it's, you know, not a big deal. Very easy to get there. And I kept thinking to myself, why did I not do this earlier? I could have very easily gone to the first one-night stand, and as a live event, just watching it on pay-per-view, I had so much fun. I can only imagine what it was like to be there. But it wasn't me. It was actually Webmaster Mike, the Lord Overseer of SEScoops.com. He was in attendance actually both years, in 2005 and 2006, lucky bastard. So he was the one that you most likely saw on camera. Maddie writes in, Dear Solomonster, I too predicted the career versus streak match weeks in advance, so in response to you telling somebody last week that they should give themselves a Barry Horowitz pat on the back, I will proceed to give myself a Diamond Dallas Page self-high-five. I have two questions. Number one, This past week on Raw, I heard Triple H tell Shawn Michaels that, quote, once they win the tag team championships, they have 30 days to defend the titles. This is the first time I've heard of such a rule regarding titles. This made me think of all the arbitrary rules that seem to come and go in the official WWE rule book. With that in mind, when do they phase out the IC champ is automatically the number one contender for the WWF title rule, and when did this annoying if a champ loses his title, he gets an automatic rematch rule come about? Well, first of all, you say that you've never heard of this 30-day rule, which is surprising to me, because although they really don't enforce it anymore, that rule has been around for years and years and years. I remember watching WWF when I was younger, and you had Shawn Michaels as the Intercontinental Champion. He was the chicken shit heel who would always get counted out of his matches, and he wouldn't want to defend the title, and they would always make mention of the fact that a title has to be defended within 30 days or you get stripped of the belt. So that's always been a rule, even though they really don't enforce it anymore. As far as these other two questions, you know, when did they phase out the IC champion thing? I don't know that that was ever a hard and fast rule in WWE, but if they did phase it out, it was phased out sometime in the late 90s, because I can't remember a time in the most recent decade where that was actually specifically mentioned. And as far as, you know, this rule about, well, if a champ loses his belt, he gets an automatic rematch, that's something that only started in the last couple of years. And I agree, it annoys me too. I mean, it kind of makes sense, I guess, if you are a champion. You should be entitled to a rematch. Maybe it was a fluke. Maybe you were screwed. I think, you know, it's the sort of thing that really they started to use as a crutch in the last 3 or 4 years. I don't remember it really being used too much before that. And there's a whole bunch of other supposed rules over the years. I mean, the biggest one that I remember concerns the Royal Rumble. You know, and it used to be a situation where no matter what, you know, if you were thrown out of the ring or if you somehow were propelled over the top rope and both feet hit the floor, you were eliminated, and that's the way it was. And then in 1992, at the peak of the feud between Randy Savage and Jake Roberts, you know, Savage came down to the ring, Jake was in there, Savage was going nuts looking for Jake, he beat him up, he threw him out, and then Savage proceeded to do what he always used to do, which is why his knees are shot these days. He would grab the top rope and propel himself out to the floor. And I've watched the Royal Rumble from 1992 like dozens upon dozens of times, no joke, because it's my favorite Rumble match ever. And I've watched it enough to kind of conclude, without knowing for sure what happened, that Savage was not supposed to do what he did. He probably should have just slid under the bottom rope or gone through the middle ropes when he was following Jake out, and probably just lost his mind there for 1 second, went over the top, and you can hear the announcers, Gorilla Monsoon and Bobby Heenan, talking about how stupid it was. He just eliminated himself. Undertaker was in the Rumble. He came out, grabbed Savage, threw him back in the ring, and, you know, Monsoon just couldn't figure out why he was doing that, because he kept saying Savage was eliminated, and Bobby Heenan started to say something, and then he stopped, almost as though there was somebody in his ear, or somebody passed him a note, and there was silence for a little bit, and then Heenan all of a sudden goes, oh, well, you know, I think what happened is that Savage wasn't propelled over the top rope. You have to be thrown over the top rope in order to be eliminated. And Monsoon's response was great. He, instead of just agreeing and moving on, his response was something to the effect of, well, you know, I'll take your word for it. So I think Savage really was not supposed to throw himself over the top, but they had a cover for it somehow, because Savage wasn't supposed to be eliminated at that point. In fact, he was going to be one of the final four people in that match. So they let him back in. But fast forward to 1997. I don't know why I remember these things, but I do. It was the Royal Rumble match in San Antonio at the Alamo Dome. And they had a couple of guys from Mexico in there, including the legendary Mil Máscaras. And, of course, Mil Máscaras is one of these legends like Carlos Colon and all these other people that have dominated over the years. They're a really big star, big deal, big legend. And you couldn't make Mil Máscaras look weak. He wouldn't agree to let somebody throw him out of the ring. So there was a spot during the Royal Rumble where this dumb shit climbs to the top rope, and I guess one of the other Mexican wrestlers had already been eliminated. They were outside the ring. He climbs to the top rope and basically jumps to the outside on top of the other guy who's already on the floor, basically eliminating himself. Now, he was not propelled by anybody. You know, remember what Bobby Heenan said in 1992, you have to be propelled by somebody. Well, he wasn't. He eliminated himself, and it stood. They said he was gone, and he went to the back. So it's one of those rules that They'll use it whenever it suits their needs. It will change all the time. I would love one day to see this WWE rule book. I would love to just sit here and analyze it. But that's basically what they do. You know, these rules are subject to change based on their needs, and that's just another example of it. Gail writes in, Dear Solo Monster, what's up with TNA? I mean, they're killing the knockout division. I know you don't care much about women's matches, but you got to admit that TNA has, or had, the best women's matches compared to WWE. Alyssa Flash, Awesome Kong, Tracy Brooks, and Roxy have all been released or fired from TNA. Are Hogan and Bischoff trying to get rid of the knockouts division? It's kind of funny once you think about it, because in number one, you got a woman, that being Dixie Carter, running TNA, and it just doesn't make any sense at all, killing the women's division. I know she told Hogan and Bischoff to run things in TNA to get to the top, but killing the knockouts division just is not right. Are Hogan and Bischoff trying to get rid of the knockouts division just like they got rid of the six-sided ring? I don't think they're trying to get rid of... You know, one of their goals was not to eliminate women's wrestling from TNA. They may not place as great of an emphasis on women's wrestling. I think that's true. I think Hogan and Bischoff are more concerned with the main event guys and, you know, trying to put on as many big stars as they can to counter WWE and make their show feel like it's must-see TV. And quite frankly, Impact is not must-see TV if your focus is the women's division. I don't care how good those women's matches are. Your average fan flipping channels is not going to give a shit if they're watching Alyssa Flash against Roxy, but they may actually care if they see RVD and Jeff Hardy on their TV screen. I'm not saying it's right, but most people will not stop for longer than a few seconds if you just have the women wrestling, unless they're wrestling naked or something, because people are perverts. But we know. But then again, I don't want to see Awesome Kong doing that. If Awesome Kong is gone from TNA, I don't know that for sure. I know she claimed on her Twitter that she was wish well in her future endeavors. TNA has not announced, I don't think, unless I missed something, I don't think there's been a formal announcement of her release. I will say this, if Awesome Kong is gone from TNA, and if she's free to do whatever she wants to, I know she doesn't fit the mold of the usual WWE diva, but WWE would be stupid not to pick up Awesome Kong. Bring her in as a monster heel. I would do it in a heartbeat. And in fact, put her on the Raw brand to feud with Gail Kim. Gail Kim and Awesome Kong had a great feud and great matches in TNA. And then Gail Kim went back to WWE, and she sucked. I don't know why. I don't know if it was just that she really didn't want to leave TNA. She had a lot of friends there, but they wouldn't pay her, and so she was really depressed. She had to go back to WWE. She just doesn't seem as motivated as she was in TNA, because Gail Kim was one of the linchpins of that knockouts division. But she has not been good in her latest WWE run. So maybe bringing Awesome Kong over to Raw and kind of reigniting that feud inside of a WWE ring, even though WWE will not give the women more than 4 minutes for a match, that might actually be the best thing to do. I would love to see Awesome Kong go to WWE. But would they take her? I mean, that's the question. Like I said, you look at Awesome Kong, she doesn't exactly... it's kind of like if you took all the WWE divas and threw Awesome Kong in there, and then you said, you know, which one of these does not belong? Yeah, it's one of those things. But I think, when I think Awesome Kong and, like, what she was doing in TNA, I think she could draw money. So who gives a shit what she looks like? She's good at what she does. She's passionate about what she does. So passionate is she that she beat the shit out of Bubba the Love Sponge. How can you not like a woman who beats the shit out of Bubba the Love Sponge? Come on, people. Edward from Overland Park writes in, apparently it's home of the Johnson County Drivers. Seems very proud of that fact. Dear Solomons, I've been a fan of the show since episode 28. I don't usually write in with too many questions, mainly because I agree with a lot of you on things, but I do listen and look forward to your show every week. I get bummed out when you skip a week, but hey, shit happens. First of all, I want to point out that I watched the rundown of WrestleMania so far from what they showed on SmackDown, and it brought a smile to my face. I agree that WWE is doing a great job this year, a lot better than the last couple of years. My question is, do you think that Triple H will really put a guy like Sheamus over at WrestleMania, especially since he has, quote-unquote, endorsed him already as a potential WWE superstar? Personally, Sheamus has grown on me ever since he beat the crap out of John Cena. I added that part in, by the way, beat the crap. He is really great on the mic and has been doing well in the ring. I personally hope he does, or otherwise, I am afraid that Sheamus might be the victim of getting lost in the shuffle on Raw. That would be tragic. On a side note, I think Sheamus' theme music is perfect. You have to listen to the lyrics. I know you said before that he needs a more sinister theme, but I like the one he has now. Keep up the good work. Look forward to more sound-offs. Well, thank you for the kind words, and I will say this about Sheamus' theme music. Believe it or not, I know I did talk trash about it many, many weeks ago, and you'll be happy to know that Sheamus' theme song is now my ringtone on my BlackBerry. It is my theme song that people hear when people call me. Nobody has any fucking clue what music this is from, and that's what makes it so great. That's why I love sometimes using wrestling theme music as my as my ringtone. I know it makes me a total mark, but it's just comical to see people look at me like, what the fuck is that? They have no idea. I mean, hey, it's better than playing a Lady Gaga song, okay? So yeah, I agree, actually. I'm actually a fan of his theme music now. I talked about this earlier. I don't know what the outcome of that match is going to be. It's not apparent to me. I don't see Triple H just beating him clean with a pedigree, because I just think it would do so much harm to Sheamus. I mean, their match is already going to get lost in the shuffle. The only way to redeem that match is to have Sheamus win, because people, I think, would be genuinely shocked. I mean, if Sheamus gave Triple H a big boot to the head and pinned him 1-2-3, you know, whatever leads up to it, maybe Sheamus cheats, whatever he does, if he wins the match, that will leave an impression on people. People will remember the Bret Hart match and the Shawn Michaels match and the John Cena match, but they'll also remember, hey, Sheamus pinned Triple H clean at WrestleMania. That's a big deal. If Triple H just beats him with the pedigree, it doesn't serve any purpose. I could see them doing maybe some sort of a no contest if they're going to lead to a rematch at the next pay-per-view, but I don't want to see Sheamus lose either. I agree. I think they've done such a good job, not a great job, they've done a good job of pushing him and making him out to be a monster the last couple of months. I just think you would undo a lot of that good by having Triple H just beat him clean at WrestleMania. And lastly here, John, Manchester, UK, writes in, Dear Solid Monster, longtime listener, have enjoyed every sound off since episode 50. Keep up the good work. In Sound Off 101, you were asked what your thoughts were on your favorite Hell in a Cell match. This got me thinking, as I like to do my own little answers to the questions you receive in my head. I thought the six-man Hell in a Cell match from Armageddon 2000, and thought to myself, wouldn't it be great to do a six-man or maybe even just a fatal four-way Hell in a Cell at this year's Hell in a Cell pay-per-view? It would add some variety to the show instead of just doing one-on-ones or tag matches. What are your thoughts on this? Well, obviously you can't do a fatal four-way because they've got a fucking pay-per-view now called Fatal Four-Way. You know, coming soon we'll have WWE Handicap Match on pay-per-view. Now, as far as another six-man Hell in a Cell, I'm not a big fan of matches where you just take a whole bunch of guys and throw them in there. But I'm not sure this is a bad idea, because to me, you really water down and kill the Hell in a Cell concept by having three different Hell in a Cell matches on the same pay-per-view. If you had a six-man Hell in a Cell, you're just having one big Hell in a Cell match, which I don't think would be the worst thing in the world. Even though I'm not, again, the big fan of those matches that some people are. I mean, that six-man Hell in a Cell where Rikishi went off the side of the cage and Kurt Angle won back in 2000 was, I remember, a very good match, but it's by no means one of my favorite Hell in a Cells. I guess my only other fear is that if they do a six-man Hell in a Cell, it's not quite the same thing, but it almost is a little too similar to a War Games match. You know, again, a War Games match, it's usually teams of five, and there's usually two rings instead of one, which WWE has never done before. And I know they're still considering doing War Games this year, either as its own standalone pay-per-view or possibly making the Bragging Rights main event a War Games match. So I think if you did something like that, it would almost, especially later in the year, it would just be too close to the look and the feel of a War Games match. And I would much, much rather have a War Games match in WWE. So that would be my only knock against the idea. So that's going to do it. I'm going to cinch up the mailbag here on this beautiful Sunday here in New York. It's about damn time. I think we've had about 40 inches of snow, literally 40 inches of snow this season so far. It's not over yet, but we're enjoying a nice 55-degree sunny day here in New York. Unfortunately, I'm a little under the weather, so I'm not outside to enjoy it. But the next best thing, I'm doing this show, and what can be better than that? TheSolidMonster@gmail.com is the email address to write into me. Again, I know some of you have been leaving me a lot of responses on Twitter. And my advice to you, it's fine to send me replies, but don't mass reply me. If you've got a lot of shit to say, just put it all in a very concise email and just email it to me. And there's a better chance I'll even mention it on the next show if you do that. Follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/Solomonster. Of course, you can download this show for free, the iTunes store. You can subscribe. It'll be automatically delivered to you each and every week when a new show is posted. It does not get any better than that. And this Monday night, March 8th, big Monday Night War, Raw vs. Impact. Again, I don't have a good feeling about this Impact show, but I want to see them do well. And I don't know. They've got a lot of stuff planned for the show. Vince Russo supposedly has been working hard on this show for weeks and weeks and weeks, which, again, it makes me shake my head. Why do you need weeks and weeks and weeks to work on one fucking television show? I could sit in a room with Noah Mark and Webmaster Mike, and we could come up with a plan for Impact in 2 hours. Why does it take this man weeks and weeks to overbook a show? I don't know. Maybe we'll see RVD, maybe we'll see Jeff Hardy. Sting will be there. And, of course, Hulk Hogan, back in action, teaming with the Monster Abyss in the main event against Nature Boy Ric Flair and AJ Styles. Ric Flair making his official return to the ring on U.S. soil. Let's forget those Australia matches for a second. In just about 2 full years. In the same city he retired in, Orlando, Florida. Should be interesting. That, of course, is up against a main event on Raw of Vince McMahon against John Cena. There's also a handicap match with Legacy, Ted DiBiase and Cody Rhodes taking on Randy Orton. And the next chapter of that feud will unfold. And, of course, Chris Angel will hopefully make Michael Cole disappear. So that is your lineup for Monday night. Should be another inductee announced into the WWE Hall of Fame. Whatever show you watch, and I'm sure many of you will be watching both, I hope you enjoy it. I'm looking forward to it. I think we all had a lot of fun on January 4th. This doesn't quite have the same feeling or sense of urgency that January 4th had. I think that was a more important date. But this is a big deal. This is a very big deal. This is TNA's big move that they have been waiting years to pull the trigger on. And now they're on Monday nights. They got what they wanted. And it's time for them to sink or swim. The onus is on them. The onus is on Hogan. The onus is on Dixie Carter, Vince Russo, Eric Bischoff, to make this work and to give people an alternative. Not a version of WWE Lite. Give them an alternative to what they see on Monday nights on the USA Network. We'll see if they can do it. So, until next time, be well, stay safe, as always. Hopefully we'll have my new computer up and running, and we'll be back with Sound Off 103 and my thoughts on the new Monday Night Wars right here next week. So until then, take it easy, and enjoy Monday night, guys.
You've been listening to The Solomonster.
You know, I really just don't understand what they're doing.
Anybody agree with me out there? I mean, anybody. Come on, throw me a bone here.
Probably the single dumbest thing I've ever seen in my entire life.
God, I love this business. On SE Scoops.